is a pleasure for me to speak today about something I've been working on for the last 20 years. This is a little different. Our focus is different from a lot of the presentations we heard. Our focus is narrow geographically, and at least, and something a little different. I just start off, for those of you that might not know too much about the wheat stem sawfly cycle, if we start out here at spring emergence, this happens in Montana in the May-June area, and the flight period is short for wheat stem sawfly, but it doesn't, if it's timed at the right time, it doesn't take too long for mating and oviposition to happen. And what's required in the susceptible wheat is a jointed internode. So wheat stem sawfly is a problem in wheat areas where the flight period and the susceptible wheat stage coincide. Once oviposition happens in the wheat plant, that egg hatches and larva develops inside the wheat stem, where it feeds most of the life cycle of the wheat plant, and it feeds up inside and down inside the stem, causes most of its damage inside the stem, and then as the wheat matures, it moves to an overwintering position at the base of the plant, we're down here now, and forms an overwintering chamber. It notches the inside of the wheat stem above its overwintering chamber, which causes the wheat to fall over at maturity, and overwinters at that site, pupates, and emerges the next spring, and that completes the life cycle. Wheat is cut at the ground level prior to harvest, and this just shows what it looks like in the field. This is one of our on-farm trials last year, showing some of the variability between solid stem and hollow stem cultivars in our testing program. I don't have a big map, but this is the Montana-Canadian border, and this kind of shows the area where wheat stem sawfly is an economic problem in North America. It is, wheat stem sawfly is endemic to North America, but it's an economic problem only where we have this susceptible wheat stage and wheat stem sawfly flight period coinciding. The last couple years in Montana, it's caused about $100 million crop loss, and losses are due to about a 20% decrease in grain weight due to larval feeding. You don't even see that. That already happens before. The other part of the damage is a stem lodging at maturity that causes harvest losses and increased harvest costs. So Montana winter wheat production is just shown here. About 80% is in the north central and central parts of Montana. The results that I'm reporting today is from this Hill County area that coincide both with the area of wheat stem sawfly prevalence and also a major winter wheat production area in Montana. The mechanism that we're using for wheat stem sawfly resistance is stem solidness, and I just wanted to show you our evaluation scale that I'm going to report on. But what we do to evaluate stem solidness is look at a visual rating of stem cross sections from normal or hollow would be on this side, solid stem. Fully expressed would be over here. We do some also from across different internodes in the plant. So if we had a fully solid internodes from ground level to the head, it would be 25 on our scale, and a hollow check would be somewhere down around 5. It is a fairly highly heritable trait, controlled by probably only two or three genes. And Luther Talbert at Montana State University has done quite a bit in terms of, and lots of other researchers over the past 100 years have looked at wheat genes associated with stem solidness. But we have markers for at least two, one on 3B and one on 3D that Luther Talbert's group has shown to be associated with stem solidness. And we've also looked at stem solidness from lots of different areas around the world, and at least we know that all the solidness accessions from around different parts of the world are going to carry at least this 3B locus. What I'm going to report today just is a report on a focused breeding effort for a small geographic area, and I just want to show you the pattern and effect of stem solidness on wheat stem soft fly cutting in 10 Hill County environments over a 6-year period. A couple of those we didn't get very much wheat stem soft fly cutting, so they're not part of the data set. Our plant material was our wheat stem soft fly trial that contains up and coming experimental lines plus check cultivars. And in each environment, we looked at stem solidness during early grain fill, FEECS 11.1 to 11.2, and evaluated wheat stem soft fly cutting at harvest maturity. And then mostly what I'm going to report today is a regression analysis in individual environments, regressing wheat stem cutting on stem solidness. This is what the data looks like. There's 10 regression lines here. These are heterogeneous regression lines, but they're similar in that they all show that stem solidness has a negative effect on wheat stem soft fly cutting. The extremes are shown here. I think about negative 4.6 is the slope of this one line here compared to the other extreme. Was the slope was only negative 0.6 down here. This table shows the same 10 regression lines. The slopes here are shown. Coefficients of determination. Usually that regression line explained quite a bit of the variation in wheat stem soft fly cutting. I also show here the variation in stem solidness between our hollow and selected solid stem group. I'm mostly interested in today's presentation to have you concentrate here on the means. The average slope over these 10 environments is about negative 2, and the solidness means here show that we've achieved about 14 units improvement in stem solidness due to our conventional phenotypic selection program for stem solidness. And that's repeated here. We've gained 14 units of stem solidness. Each unit reduces soft fly cutting by somewhere around 2%. So compared to our hollow stem checks, on average, our phenotypic selection program is resulting in about a 28% decrease in cutting by wheat stem soft fly. Another way to look at the effectiveness of our phenotypic selection program is cultivar development. We have developed 3 solid stem winter wheat cultivars over the period that I've worked in Montana. These 3 cultivars have been highly successful and accepted by our producers. I think probably occupied about 6.8 million acres of winter wheat production, about 36% of Montana winter wheat production. Janu's been our leading winter wheat variety over the last 4 years, and Rampart was the leading variety the 4 years before that. I kind of point this out because I'm going to show you in the next couple slides the yield penalty associated with stem solidness, and even though Janu is a lot lower yielding than some options. It's the choice because of the severity of the insect in Montana. And this is that data based on our best yield estimates. This is over 7 years, 149 location years of data. In the absence of sawfly, we have about a 15% yield penalty associated with our highest yielding solid stem as compared to our highest yielding hollow variety yellow stem. So a big yield penalty in the absence of sawfly. And our producers certainly wouldn't use these solid stem varieties unless they had a sawfly problem, but they also believe that the converse is true, that hollow stem varieties like Yellowstone are going to perform better in infested environments. So we do have that problem with our producers convincing them that these actually have utility in infested environments. And this is just the opposite. It's yield performance in wheat stem sawfly environments, and of course the solid stem varieties protect the yield better. They don't suffer that as much of that 20% yield loss to grain weight. So you can see they are competitive in infested environments, and the hollow stem varieties, the yield actually is no worse statistically, but no better either. And cutting Rampart is actually more solid than Janu, so you can see effectively these solid stem cultivars reduce wheat stem sawfly cutting in the field. And then it's pretty easy to see that maybe there's something to it when you go out to the yield trial and the only couple of plots that are standing up are ones that actually are solid stem cultivars. And then some of the ones that aren't standing up are also solid stem cultivars. You can see we have attempted to move to a semi-solid type of phenotype where we're trying to actually combine stem solidness with higher yield potential, and you can see at least at this level of pressure that we had last year in Loma, these were cut extensively, but still quite a bit less than the hollow stem cultivars. I also wanted to report on what we've done with marker-assisted selection. It is our current program of phenotypic selection for stem solidness, and our testing program is expensive. We have parallel programs for hollow and solid stem cultivars. We have to target nurseries specifically into infested areas, so it's an expensive program. We would like to be able to convert high-yielding hollow stem cultivars to solid stem version using marker-assisted selection, and we've attempted to do this, and this shows our initial efforts in our assessment of progress and what we're doing now. So in 2004, we did start a marker-assisted backcross program for stem solidness using two microsatellite markers that had been shown to be linked to loci affecting stem solidness. After a couple back cross cycles, we derived F3 lines from back cross 2 populations using markers and put them into field studies looking at stem solidness and also wheat stem cutting tolerance. And I'm not going to report too many data other than the conclusions, but these markers were associated with solidness, and we could select for enhanced levels of solidness with our microsatellite markers. However, the expression level was still way below the level that we needed for effective pest control, so we still need to find additional quantitative trait loci for stem solidness and markers that we can use to enhance this program. So right now we're just continuing with our conventional phenotypic selection program for cultivar development. So I guess I'm going to conclude with an update on what my colleague that spent his life working with wheat stem softflies had in 1978. And we haven't solved the problem, and I'm going to say during the past 100 years we have learned many things about the wheat stem softfly, some of them pretty intimate, and yet some mysteries remain. We've held serve, but we haven't gained much in the past 20 years. Now, zero tillage and other developments could create an environment in which softfly could flare up again. It has, and we should be better prepared than we were 40 years ago. We were, so that's kind of where we're at. Thank you. No, what we've seen is the 3B L locus that we've had seems to be always present, but loci alone or locus alone is not enough stem solidness for effective control, at least in our environment. Yeah, we would like to find additional genes so we can raise the expression level up. It would be up above 20 on our 5 to 25 scale, so we need a pretty high level of stem solidness for effective control in Montana. Corley. There's obviously a big, we haven't experimentally been able to at least show any linkage, but obviously there's a physiological cost associated with partitioning to make that stem solidness, but I don't have much information on that. Scott? Yeah, Luther Talbert and David Weaver at Montana State University have been working in with chemical ecology, and they're working together on wheat attractants or repellents that affect softfly oviposition behavior. And in terms of host plant resistance, these are something that work only in this situation where there's a choice of which plants to overposition on. So if you had a field that's non-attractive to females, they're still going to overposition and infest one of those. However, you could use them in management schemes such as trap crops and stuff where you could put an attractive trap crop around a less attractive, higher yielding, maybe hollow stem variety. So they're working on those scenarios and kind of all scenarios of those. Also, of course, oat is immune to wheat stem softfly, so as I think it is to hessian fly, like. So, you know, there's always that in the future sometime when we can figure out that mechanism of immunity.